Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's like, besides older age, sometimes we have to like sort of jump through hoops a little bit. And this came a very long bus ride, and it was kind of a little late. Finally, we didn't have last night, or some few difficulties. And now immediately front and center, it's good practice to keep you, you know, awake and alert, because you always have to expect surprises and challenges. But the real jumping through hoops is the fact that we're in the 10th canto, and I'm not the only one giving classes that is, you know, what can you say? So what, in one sense, it's a very good exercise for us, because it makes us, it's called like calling up bluff. We're with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Many classes we can just lean on or support the class with the whole, so much you could talk about is why there's God, why God is a person, why there's such a thing as transmigration, why it makes, you could talk about so many basically Vedic and theistic subjects. But when you get to these verses, you can do that, but then you're not going to really be focusing on the class. You're talking about something that you could talk about in other cantos and other parts of the Bhagavatam, but now we're in the summum bonum, we're in the ashraya, we're in the ultimate subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, which is smiling lotus face. And to understand what's going on, you have to go, you might say, deeper and more very genuinely go into our own theology, which gets a lot deeper than, for instance, today's Christmas. So, yeah, Son of God, He's the Savior, and there's some miracles and Immaculate Conception and different things, and that you can, you know, that's I'm not in any way disparaging it, but it's so elementary compared to kind of things we're supposed to know about and think about when we try to comment on the tenth canto. Fill up some time in the class, because I don't know exactly what to say, so this will take more time. Okay. Well, actually, Kaliya Panitabhu is about the most practical person I've ever met in my entire life. got this sixth sense, cutting to the chase, you know, just how the things work, how to do things. But we thank you very much. All right, so which is the group of verses? The first one is 30. What's the first verse? 31? Okay. And goes through until 34, is it? So which one should we recite together? First one is okay? Yes? Iti angam upadishanti eke ismityam prad utaritam muni pasham nivase kim gate listam darshanam ityango pita santyeke ismitya pragutaritam muni pasham nivase kim Tate tarista darshanam Ityango padi santyeke Vismitya prag udaritam Munipasha nivashekim Tate tarista darshanam Ityango padi santyeke Vismitya prag udaritam Nivasa nivasekim Gate tarista darshanam Anyone else? Any gentlemen? Jango Padi Santiago. Jisapa. Univasa Nivasiki. Tapeta Rista Darsanam. Mataji. Jango padi santyeke Vismitya pragudaritam Univasa Jango padi santye darshanam would mean iti. Thus, Anga, my dear King Parikshit, Upadishanti, we're proposing, aka some, ismitya, forgetting, Prak previously, Dadi Tam, what had been described, Muni of sages, Vasha, the residence, Nivashe, when he is residing, Kim, how, Tateta, can arise, Arista, of calamities, Darshanam, the appearance. Translation and purport by the BBT. One little editorial note that we usually think that the team that did the Bhagavatam, that we usually sort of assign roles and say that, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, he dealt with the Sanskrit, and Davida Prabhu edited the English, and of course, Ibn Angamaraj wrote the purport. It may not be quite so defined like that, because Gopi Puranadana Prabhu told me personally that he actually wrote a pretty good number of the purports also, especially in the 10th canto. So if anyone has any additional information about that after the class, Gopi. Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. Okay, maybe it was mostly at that part. So I'm not trying to in any way take away credit where credit is due or anything like that, but it was really a team. And it's also, that applies also when we read the purports to Brahma Sangita. We just assume that this is by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, but actually, I guess you can plagiarize your own father a little bit and get away with it. Some of the writing was actually by his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So, yeah. A little detail. So, some men proposed that the troubles were due to Akura's absence. That last phrase is in brackets, you know, editing to help us understand. Some men proposed that the troubles were due to Akura's absence, but they had forgotten the glories of the Supreme Lord, which they themselves had so often described. Indeed, how can calamities occur in a place where the personality of Godhead, the residence of all the sages, resides? It's okay if you don't repeat it, I think. Do you get by with you not repeating it, or do you feel deprived? Do you like to repeat it? Okay. Some men propose. Now, this is in brackets, so you can read. This is like optional reading. That the troubles were due to Akura's absence. In other words, if it weren't for the brackets, it would be some men proposed, but they had forgotten the glories. In other words, it didn't. The text doesn't specify what they proposed, but here it is. Some men proposed that the troubles. Okay. But they had forgotten the glories of the Supreme Lord, which they themselves had so often described. Indeed, how can calamities occur in a place where the personality of Godhead, the residence of all the sages, resides? Muni vasha nivashe kim. How could, where the, all the, in other words, if the presence of sages in a particular place is what prevents calamities from happening, what to speak if the residence of all the sages, like Tirthashtadam, the basis of all places of pilgrimage, in this case, Muni Vasha Nivasha Jin, the residence of all the sages arise, then how could there be calamities? That in itself is a bit of a question arises here, but I'll read the short purport and then maybe ask that question. Purport by BBT team. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti provides the following insight on this verse. In Benares, Akura became famous for performing sacrifices on golden altars for his abundant charity to the Brahmins. How did Akura become so rich? so he can perform such amazingly opulent sacrifice. He got by with a little help from his friend, the shaman Chakachur, which was really, it was nice to have one of those, right? Okay, so he was performing sacrifice on golden altars and for his abundant charity to the Brahmanas. When the citizens of Dwarka heard about this, some of them gossiped that Krishna, considering Akrura's arrival, had sent him into exile. Wow. To dispel this new and incredible stain on his reputation, Lord Krishna created various calamities in Dwarka, thus inducing the citizens to call for Akrura's return, which the Lord then ordered. What I'll do is I'll make a brief comment on this, and I'll read the rest of it. And then I'll present my thesis, something else, philosophical speculation, which is sometimes allowed. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, the beginning of the purport. Prabhupada actually encourages philosophical speculation. Other places in the Bhagavatam, the same phrase is used, but it's not at all encouraged. Well, I like, I take shelter of the Bhagavad Gita. So one thing that struck me even years earlier when I was reading this many years ago is that the calamities were there. So what kind of a question is, how could calamities occur where the personality of God, it's almost like you're saying there were no calamities. No, there were calamities. They were occurring. The question is, what was the cause of the calamity? So people in general, they were taking, even to great devotees, we can say pure devotees, but somehow or another, they were taking this position that, you know, we also say familiarity breeds contempt. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says they became evil-minded. Even some evil entered into their mentalities. Seems a little contradictory when you're dealing with great devotees, the personally present. Of course, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti Mamudam, Anusim Tams, even when he was personally present, Prabhupada explains in the purport, not that everybody was able to catch it. And we're not only talking about those like the gopis and Nanda Maharaj and Madhya Soda, who were so much sheltered in yoga maya and were very fortunately, you know, you might say, protected from perceiving the majesty and the opulence of the Lord in order to enhance their loving relationship. Talking about people who are not necessarily so intimately related. And they also, and they could be great devotees, but it could become bewildering. The Lord, in the introductory note, is we hear sometimes, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Navigyaya Bhujaya. That it's very, very difficult to understand what is the inner meaning, what is the purpose of the actions and the symptoms of a great devotee of the Lord, but to speak of the Lord himself. So, as I was hinting at the beginning, in this canto of Bhagavatam, there are many situations where it becomes particularly challenging, and even great devotees who were personally present when Krishna was present, they became confused. So, of course, it's all lila. We become confused. It's maybe it's lila, but not as much as with them. So when the citizens of Dwarka heard about this, some of them gossiped that Krishna sounds so small-minded. So in other words, they were thinking that they're just externally that okay, Akrura, he's very powerful. His father, Svapakha, how do you say him? Svapakha. He was known to be very powerful. Take a look at Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. By the way, when I was reminding myself that, oh yeah, they're on the 10th canto in Malachura. So what I did an emergency measure. I found you can get the Vishnu Chakravarti Sararta Darshini on Kindle. So I downloaded it to the Kindle. And but he doesn't complete Hare Krishna. He doesn't completely rescue us in the sense that you have to say something about these verses. So he gives some many different insights into these verses. Unfortunately, I'm not in the right place, so I won't read verbatim, but I'll try to remember some of the things that he said. He gives some answers. He gives some solutions to these knots that we have to untie. How could this happen? How could that happen? How could great devotees start gossiping? Well, he didn't say much about that. I think what I mentioned is just about is all that we can say now. But first of all, there were two times. We hear in the verse, this is the second time. How can, in the purport, I mean to say, this new and incredible stain on his reputation. Why is the word new there? Because you just heard recently, in the last few days, or maybe last couple of weeks, that there was another stain on Krishna's reputation, that they accused him of killing Satyajit to steal the jewel, because King Satyajit didn't want to turn over the jewel, at least at first, to Krishna. So they say that he was the one that killed him, or he was the one that killed Krita Varma. How did it go? Shatadanva, not Krita Varma. Krita Varma was an accomplice in the conspiracy, but which is another conundrum. How these great devotees like Akrura, and that you probably discussed a few days ago, the influence of bad association or what have you, and there are all the more esoteric reasons that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur brings out. But so Satadanya, so that was one gossip about Krishna that he did that. And because he wanted the jewel back. So. And then the other is now that the gossip is that Krishna felt that it, almost like Krishna would be like Lord Indra, who would feel challenged if a great yogi, a mystic yogi, would perform such great yajnas or such great austerities, that the position of Indra might become in any way, how should we say, challenged, diminished. Comparison with this great yogi with his great austerity. So they were thinking that Krishna is like that. And he was thinking that Satyajit that Akrura, was Krishna's uncle, first of all, because he was a senior. And that he was doing so, he was just so prominent and so powerful, and his father also, that that Krishna was that he made him go away or something out of a sense of rivalry. So Krishna's going to call him back to dispel that rumor. It's very intricate, actually. All these conundrums, all these paradoxes. So they thought that Krishna created, so to dispel this, Krishna created the conundrum. In other words, they also assumed, people in general, they thought that the calamities were due because Akrura is not here. That's why. Krishna has nothing to do with it. But Krishna has everything to do with it. Because if sages are present, then there shouldn't be calamities. What to speak if Krishna's there, the, you might say, sitting place or the shelter of all sages, then there shouldn't be calamities. So if there were calamities, it wasn't because Akrura wasn't there. That's relatively small time. It's because Krishna decided that let there be calamity. And he did that just as a quick ploy to create a situation where people wanted Akrura to come back. Then Akrura would come back, Krishna would greet him, and he said, oh, I guess Krishna's not envious of Akrura or something like that. Now, it's not that Krishna has a false ego. He's worried about his profile and his reputation either. We shouldn't think like that either. Let me do what I said I was going to do, which is always a good thing to do, and read the rest myself, and up to 34, and then we'll would we have till 8:45 or till 9? You'll be the only one here. Till 9. Okay, we can, it's doable. Still. Text 32. Deve Varshati Kashi Shaha Svapalka Yadatayavai Svasutam Tato Varshat Sma Kashishu. Nothing like unity and unison. Translation. The elders said, previously when Lord Indra had withheld rain from Kashi, Benares, the king of that city gave his daughter Gandini to Svapalka, who was then visiting him. It soon rained in the kingdom of Kashi. Purport. Svapalka was a Kurur's father, and the citizens felt that the son must have the same power as the father. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that because of Akrura's relationship with his maternal grandfather, the king of Kashi, in a time of difficulty, Akrura went to that city. So this is kind of like the bottom line. It's like we have the acharyas who are giving us the real deal, so we don't have to question what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. This we accept as Tatva, is the actual explanation, or Siddhanta on the verse, that he's saying that this is why Akrura went to that city, because he was fleeing, he was running away. Akrura and Kritavarma, when they saw what happened to Satadanya, they said, whoa, you better go on vacation or something. They left quickly. But where did they go? So they went to that city, king of Kashi. So they went to that city, and the reason Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur did, Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, is that he had a relationship with his maternal grandfather, obviously grandfather, grandson. So in a time of difficulty, he went there. The people in general, they had, as I was explaining, they had a different idea of what his purpose was and what was happening. And then it said it soon rained on the kingdom of Kashi. So nobody thought it was a coincidence. There's a character in Agatha Christie, mystery books, and she says that one should never throw away, one should never discard coincidences until one is sure that it's only a coincidence. Mm-hmm. So in this case, people, they were right in a sense. In one sense, they were right that the rain came because of Jagya, because of sacrifice, and because of also honoring and serving a great personality, in this case, Svapalka. So when they honored him by giving, King of Kashi gave his daughter to Svapalka, and then all of a sudden the drought was resolved and there was rain. So they didn't. As far as rain coming, in the back of the book by Gurudas, I think I mentioned last time, called by his example, on the back page of the book. Right on the back page, so this has got to be bona fide, otherwise, I mean, it's certainly bona fide. He was with Prabhupada on, I guess, on the roof of the long building in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada was saying, yeah, the farmers, they're always begging Krishna, begging for rain. They're always begging for rain. They want rain. They want rain. So Prabhupada said, it's not a problem. Let it rain. Just when Prabhupada said that, a big lightning bolt came and a huge downpour took place. And the most amazing part about the pastime is that Prabhupada couldn't stand there like in a very stentorian pose and say, just see my opulence. He just said, let it rain. And walked into the room. He just turned his back on it. Just walked into the room. This is nothing. So for a pure devotee of the Lord, mystic opulence is, they stand ready to serve him, so it's not the main deal. So let me go on, text 33. Tatsutastadpabhavosham akuro yatra yatra hyam devo vivarchate tatram nopattapanam madhikaham. Whatever his equally powerful son, wherever his equally powerful son Akura stays, Lord Indra will provide sufficient rain. Now, his doesn't refer to Lord Indra, it refers to Svapalka, obviously. Wherever his or Svapalka's equally powerful son Akura stays, Lord Indra will provide sufficient rain. Indeed, that place will be free of miseries and untimely deaths. This is how some sages are thinking. That's 34. Iti vrida vacha shudva naita vadi hataranam iti madva samanaya prabhasaram janardhanaha. Hearing these words from the elders, Lord Janardhan, though aware that the absence of Akura was not the only cause of the evil omens, at least some credit is given to Akura, had him summoned back to Dwarka and spoke to him. Purport. Since Lord Krishna is the supreme controller, it was obviously by his will that certain troubles appeared in the city of Dwarka. Superficially, these evils may have been caused by Akura's absence and also by the absence of the auspicious Shamantaka jewel. Not only does it give gold, but it also protects at least the local environment from calamity. But we should recall that Dwarka is the eternal abode of Lord Krishna. It is a city of divine bliss because the Lord resides there. Still, to execute his pastimes as a prince of this world, Lord Krishna did the needful and summoned Akura. In other words, Krishna is executing his pastimes. So now, see how I can... The idea of the divinity of Krishna is being challenged by these texts, you might say. In other words, but now in a deeper way. The explanation of this doesn't only go saying, well, Krishna has something called pastime and he will hide his divinity sometimes. It goes deeper than that. That sometimes the only explanation, and Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura gets to this bottom line, that the only explanation is to enhance the loving relationships with his devotees. Otherwise, it's very hard to understand what's going on. Say one example of this. Why did Krishna, and this is almost comical, you might say, I mean, I don't mean to be in any way offensive or blasphemous, but it kind of hits you. Here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it's almost like a slapstick style, where he catches Satadanya, he chops off his head, and then here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has to search his garments. He searches his upper and lower garments of now the dead body to find the Shamantaka jewel. And he has to do that first. It looks like he has to do that. And guess what, folks? No jewel. And then Krishna says, oh, we've uselessly killed this man. The jewel's not there. I mean, this all seems so unbecoming of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to act like this. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains, and this the only explanation is rasa, is loving relationships. In this case, Krishna happened to acquire a new wife, the son of the son, the daughter of Satyajit. And so he wanted to please her. So he couldn't please her by preventing her father, Satyajit, from being killed, but he can please her that, okay, at least his killer had been brought to justice, Satadanya. So he pleased her by killing him like this. But then the other question is, why did Krishna, he's omniscient, He knows everything. Why does he have to frisk and go through the clothing to see if the jewel is there? I mean, even in the television show, the Superman, he has X-ray vision. You can see. Remember that? So what to speak of the Supreme Superman, the Adi Purush, he can't just see right away whether the jewel is there or not. He wouldn't even know. He knows Vedaham Samatitani Vartamanani Charjanav. He knows past, present, and future. How could he not know that? You see, this is bewildering. So what is the Rasika explanation? I mean, how does it, the only explanation is in terms of enhancing loving relationship. In this case, Krishna, it's something to do with the relationship between Krishna and Balaram. Of course, they're ultimately the same person. And even more between the relationship, the rasa, between Lord Balaram and Videhi, or the king of Mathila, also known under the name Janaka, is there also for this king. It must be a different Janaka from Janaka of Ramdeva, obviously. And Lord Balaram wanted to visit. I think that will just come up, or already came up, or just come up. Did it come up yet that Lord Balaram wanted to visit his dear devotee? It already came up. So that was another reason that to facilitate that Lord Balaram would do that. He was pretending with Lord Balaram that it's very complicated, actually. He was pretending that he didn't know. He was kind of, and Lord Balaram kind of played along with him. All the psychology of these relationships, it gets involved with that. And I'm sorry, I don't have it like crystal clear exactly how the explanation kind of works out. But it has to do with facilitating. You could connect the dots afterwards, homework assignment, especially if you have the Sarati, Sarata Darshini, which is not talked about the Thakur's commentary. But it has to do with facilitating Lord Balaram's desire. The very fact that they went to Mathila in that area, that gave Lord Balaram the impetus. He said, well, we're here, we might as well stop. I might as well stop. And he actually spent a few years with his dear devotee. Okay, now, just a general idea here is that it's very difficult to understand the intentions, the words, the motives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. I mean, even like Srila Prabhupada, when he was choosing that place outside of Mumbai, the devotee said, no one will ever come here. It's like way out in the boondocks. Srila Prabhupada, and not only that, but it's horrible. There's rats, there's mosquitoes, like big time. There are gundas from Mr. N. Mr. Nasty. It's like, what are we doing here? I mean, this is completely bewildering. You know, maybe they were having doubts about Srila Prabhupada's, intelligence or something. Now we have a new project. Prabhupada knew what he was doing. We can't always know. It's just like Prabhupada told you, the books are already there. Temples are already there. The devotees are already there. It's only separated by time. So we have a fantastic example in our founder, Acharya. But in general, people mess up. People don't, they don't catch it. It's so easy to get thrown. I can give examples, very personal realization. One of the 12 A's of studying Bhakti Sahaja is my father and my mother. And I gave my mother Bhagavad Gita. She got bogged down in the first chapter. And she said, how can you believe this? This is a fairy tale. And this is just not even mythology. I mean, she called it fairy tales. How do you actually believe this? Everyone blowing all these different conch shells and all these. And this is like some story. This is supposed to be a religion now or what? This is crazy. But even more to the point is I visited my father in New Jersey. When I walked in the room, he was looking in some encyclopedia, and he was saying, I thought you joined a religion. It says right here that Krishna was a historical personality here. So why? I thought you're worshiping some who you think is God. And what is, you know, he couldn't quite get it. Other example, and this is much worse, so please forgive me for mentioning this. I have a book called The Dictionary of Philosophy and Religion. And it's tempting to get a book like that. It's by a guy by the name of Reese, R-E-E-S-E. And there's a lot of good stuff in it. You can get gold from the filthy place. Why is it a filthy place? Because he has a little article on Krishna. And he says Krishna was a Rajput prince who, that's how a Rajput prince became Vishnu, a god. Well, if Lord Brahma can be confused, whether this small talkative boy playing the flute with his holding his yogurt in his wrong hand to do his discipline, Lord Vishnu, what to speak of a mundane academic who's writing some dictionary. I blacked that out in the dictionary with magic marker. I didn't want to see that. And so I can still somehow read the rest of it without becoming contaminated. It's really good information in the book. So this is so, now what is a good example to follow about becoming bewildered about Krishna's divinity? I would select for me in my small, what is that called? My small fund of knowledge, Queen Kunti. She is the ideal example to follow. She sees Gopya Dati Payiti Ta Dati Dhamata Pad Deiti Dashashu Kalilanjana Sambramaksham Bhagram Uniya Bayabhavanaya Sitasya, the situation is Sitasya Samam Vimohayati Dhirapi Yadati. She says that you became frightened when that gopi, that's Mother Yashoda, she picked up a stick and she was going to chastise you because you created, you committed an offense. You created a disturbance, three tagasi. And then you, your tears were, your eyes were over flooded with tears and the mascara, and what do you call that? Kajal, it was going all over your face and you put your head down out of fear. And yet, fear personified is frightened of you. Samam vimohayati. Indeed, I find that it's completely bewildering. So it's okay to become bewildered. It's okay to be astonished. But not that you start losing. Unless you're Mother Yashoda, or unless you're really, you can't become Mother Yashoda, but unless you become so intimate with Krishna that the yoga maya takes over, we, and at least in my own case, and I can say we should never forget Krishna's supreme personality of God. And that very phrase, I mentioned last time I visited Latua, you can get a fantastic book that was published posthumously by Tamal Krishna Goswami called Bhakti, A Living Theology of Bhakti Yoga. And it's such an incredible, it's amazingly genius. So some of the credit goes to Garuda Prabhu and also to our friend Satyaraj Prabhu, that glorifying Srila Prabhupada gives presentation of Vaishnava Siddhanta, Gaudiya Vaishnava, glorifying. And he comes up with two phrases that we just take for granted. Well, this is so simple. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotional service. And we use these phrases because Prabhupada gave it. But before Prabhupada, this translation into English was never given before. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes in the two aspects, the divinity of Lord Sri Krishna and also his personality. He's a person. So what we see these symptoms in these pastimes, we shouldn't think that's Krishna's personality. No, that's Krishna's ploy. That's Krishna's tricks. That's Krishna's tactics in order to express his personality with Satyabhama, with Balaram, and help Lord Balaram express his personality, which is ultimately Krishna himself also, with the king of Mathila, Devi, etc., etc. So, as Dr. Vijayapurna Swami says, about every 5 minutes, Does that make sense? As Gorgo Vinamarach used to say, you understand my language? So I hope it makes some sense. I could say a few more things, but I can't because the time's up. So we have very little time, but today's a holiday. So relax. All right. Well, see if anyone would like to did I read all the verses? Yeah. Okay. So does anyone want to add anything or sufficient?
Prabhu,
Oh, good. Okay, I must be Prabhu.
They're describing, you know, the great ends and elaborate arrangement that Krishna makes to enhance Surasa. And at one point in the class, you said it seems a little bit, well, I think you were referring to things that maybe were going on in this kind, or that we experience in this kind. Is this Leela or something like that? You know, like that kind of thought. But
I was talking more about like our confusion, our own confusion that comes in. But we can extend it. Yeah.
So my question is that we can understand, you know, that this kind of transcendental movement. You know, there is a certain there's the Antaranga Shakti and there's the Bahiranga Shakti. But ultimately, you know, there's a plan of the Lord that's unfolding, you know, as this movement develops, expands, and goes through its trials and tribulations. But if I seen, and I'm going to hear your comments on this, that when Krishna's making arrangements with each devotee to enhance their relationship with Krishna. Let's say provided the devotees seriously practicing. So the different adventures, the different challenges, different even calamities.
Different fall downs?
Well, even that maybe. No? But that a devotee goes through ultimately is arranged by the Lord to thicken the relationship that the devotee has with him. And, I mean, this is, you know, a potential way of looking at the different events. I mean, there was an example where you say fall down, and the devotee is out of the movement for many, many, many years. He's been active, and he's been back in. And, you know, I spoke with him, and he said, it's amazing, you know, how Krishna arranged all this, and I have this sense, you know, how he uplifted me, even if
hindsight is always 20/20. With hindsight, you continue to. Can I respond to this?
Sure.
Yeah, I would be careful of the slippery slope. I would say it's both. We fall down, that's our agenda, that's our nonsense. Even Krishna says, Nadati kasichit papam, achaya sukhitam vibhu. I'm not responsible for the pious and simple. Krishna is saying devotees, it's beyond pious and simple. But let's face it, we're involved with the process. And we are we're making a transition from being, you know, drowning in the oceans of karma and dharma and getting on the boat of Krishna consciousness. So we can see it probably that failure is the pillar of success, but we don't want to go looking for those kind of pillars. In other words, we have to take responsibility for our own nonsense. I'll analyze this kind of more in terms of Bhagavad Gita than in terms of like the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. I'd rather analyze this kind of situation in terms of more fundamental principles in Bhagavad Gita that the Purusha Sukha Dukha Nam, chapter 13, that it's the living entity who's responsible for the good and evil that he experiences, the happiness and distress in this material world. Even though the material nature ultimately under Krishna's direction is responsible for all the causes and effects in the material world, but then we get our, we do our bit by our desire. We are reactionary responsible. So then Krishna is also, as you say, then it becomes Leela, then it becomes Krishna saves the day. Krishna rescues us from our own nonsense. And then we can see how our nonsense, actually, by Krishna's mercy, my nonsense, we say, all's well that ends well. So my nonsense turned into something, you know, it was like every cloud has a silver lining or something like that. It turned out for the good. I give an example, and I don't mind mentioning it. It's not a secret. We have a wonderful new temple president in Miami. His name is Jivanath. No, it's not. It's not a secret. It was a way, I don't know if, you know, if it was like, he was way out in Maya or something like that, but he was not in association with devotees for a very long period. And then he was here in Alachua with all of you, devotees, Mataji. And then he, now he decided, he asked Bhakti Marg Swami, I don't want to just retire in Alachua. Looking all over you. I don't want to just retire in Alachua. I want to do some service for Prabhupada. So now he's the temple president. It's not that just yesterday he got back in association, but for many years he was out of association. Now during those many years, it just so happened that he became very, very successful in managing large resorts. I heard up to 1,200 people managing at a time. So he learned how to deal with people. He learned how to manage. And now he's using that skill, that very important skill that he acquired in, you know, just regular work out there in the material world. And it's certainly helping him, keeping us all in line in Miami and helping us focus. He also has a history of being a great book distributor, and he's really pushing book distribution. So it's kind of like, you might say, well, his leaving the Association of Devotees was wonderful. It was great because it was all part of the preparation so he could become the super temple president in Miami now. And we really need that. We're very blessed by it. But, you know, it's kind of, you can, it's nice, you can think like that, but still, it would have been, I would have wished that he, even if he didn't acquire so many managers, he would have not been away from devotees all those years. And I think he would have preferred that also. You see where this is going. So we have to kind of see both aspects.
You brought up the point about the fall down, but what I would say is if someone's strictly following, you know, over a long period of time, there's also different dimensions for place in life. Those, as here, you know, at least in retrospect, they're arranged for the Lord.
But they knew Kabbalah is in Shemana. Of course, the devotee always should see setbacks. It's even spiritual setbacks, in a sense. But not that the devotee doesn't accept responsibility. That's the whole spirit of the thing. Because the devotee, he says that this is happening due to my previous sinful activity. But then, you know, then ultimately the Lord arranges. But we have a free will, and sometimes it can take a long time if we're not, you know, if we don't know how to cope with these things properly.
There is that one verse, First Canto, chapter 19, verse, which describes how even if one falls down in Christian service, it doesn't become a permanent sacrifice. It's a particular to the Lord. In fact, that's who I was referencing earlier.
Oh, you're thinking the same thing.
Yeah, we
super soul. We're both thinking of the same individual. And so many individuals, we're both thinking the same individual. Is this a coincidence?
This is a
super soul. You're talking about months, I'm talking about years. I'm just saying for years, a long period of time, he was not in association. That doesn't mean he was breaking all the principles or anything like that. I don't know. I, I, I assume not. I assume he was okay, basically. But one of the most fundamental principles is he should stay in association with devotees. But somehow, by Krishna's mercy, he's taking the benefit. Just like in my own case, during the 90s, some of you remember I was here in Alachua. I lived here for 2 years. I lived here in beginning of 2002. Basically, 2 years I lived in Alachua. And I had become terribly entangled in business. And as a brahmachari at the time, it was very inappropriate to get so entangled in business. But then, in my own case, this doesn't compare with Jivanath Prabhu. That's a much more, stronger example of this. But in a little example, in my own case, that having to do business and doing shows in Tucson, Arizona, and having to deal with the public, I used to see you here, small world, that I learned how to deal with the public a little bit. I learned, how to kind of like, cool your engines and be a little bit like almost diplomatic and tactful. And, you have to kind of keep a stiff upper lip when you're standing at a table and sometimes things aren't going very well, or you have a problem with your co-worker or something like that. You have to learn how to control your senses more and how to, it's like preaching. For preaching, you have to learn these things. So hopefully, as a traveling preacher now, sannyas, that's helping me a little bit. Tilakram, he's very enthusiastic. Don't start a big controversy.
I
know your style.
Nice. Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
So the Lord is acting multifarious roles, and he wants the role to seem ordinary, because
he wants the what?
The roles, people to see him like a prince or a child or whatever, not as the supreme. In other words, to fit in the role, then you can also be the supreme and be an ordinary prince or whatever. So it looks a little bit bewildering, in the sense that when the people takes him as ordinary, then we say, well, these are demons or whatever, but he's acting that role as if he's ordinary, like a prince or whatever, and so. How would you reconcile that? Because I know one place he said, fools deride me when I come in human form.
How can you reconcile
this difference with, because, in one sense he's acting ordinary, and then at the same time you have to see him as God.
Well, we don't think that everyone who thinks Krishna gets into that mood is a demon, necessarily. Although Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur did say that, he's in English translation of his commentary, said that they had some evil overtook them. I mean, somehow the word evil is there. But, not appreciate Krishna because of Mahamaya or because of Yogamaya. So there are kind of two different mindsets. If it's completely because of Mahamaya, then you could be demon. You could be, or just ignorant, like my poor father. Krishna's an art, a historical personality, boss. But then again, it could be rasa. It could also be Krishna's own arrangement to enhance his pastimes. Sometimes to bewilder the atheist. There's even such a thing called that word Moshala Leela, it refers to Krishna's disappearance, but I think it also refers generally to Leela of Krishna, where there's actually some Maya, Mahamaya enters into it, like Krishna left behind a dead body. That's called Moshala Leela. He arranged that as a supreme magician, just to bewilder people, so Kali Yuga will kick in better. More people will think he's ordinary. That sounds amazing. Now, if we were just new initiates or like just coming, like this was a Sunday feast lecture, and I would say something like that, course, in the Lazio, they're all devotees, let's say, in a regular temple, I mean, a city temple. People would run away. They'd say, oh, then he must be an ordinary man. But that Krishna, as Yogeshwar, he purposely did that. The pastime of the suicide of the Yadus, and that's also Moksha Lila. Another example is that Krishna and Balaram, anyway, I don't want to keep saying these because they're so bewildering. But the best example for us to follow is that of Queen Kunti, who can appreciate both at the same time. We have, most of us have the vast majority of us have a long way to go before we can discard the supreme Godhead and only keep the personality. In that phrase, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. I think Ram Govinda has something to say. Prabhu.
Just to elaborate more, adding to you, that Sanatana Goswami Pad in Dasam Tikkun elaborate the departure of Krishna. And he personally brought the reference of Narada Muni's intervening, that for the purpose of atheists and impersonalists, what Krishna did sitting underneath the banyan tree, and then he was tired and he lied down, and then the hunter came and shot an arrow, which was happened to be Guru Muni. And then the whole apostle, this was for the impersonalists. But then at the same time, Narada Muni personally interviewed the demigods. And the demigod says, oh, they're very sad, depressed. So Narada Muni said, why are you depressed? They are in the antariksha, outer space.
Outer space, 800 miles up.
Yeah.
Ghost space.
Narada Muni said, what's going on? Why you all are depressed? Oh, the Lord's just departing in his airplane with all his associates. And the impersonalist and the Mayavadis or all these atheists, they never have any idea of that. But Narada Muni interviewed same time. It was very quick. And then he personally went to Madhumangal Sudan. He said, where were you yesterday? He said, with Krishna, come on. Where are you today? With him. They're just playing, having fun. They had no idea that they were in this universe. Now they are in Golok Vrindavan. They already arrived in Golok Vrindavan. But there was no difference for them whether they were here or there.
And the sports were not interrupted by
correct.
Krishna's parents.
So these three perceptions simultaneously took place.
Mm.
So devotee, we are aware of all three, but we also know the eternity.
Mm. Wonderful. Yeah. So that took place by three different groups. In the case of Queen Kunti, she simultaneously was saying, and that Nirnam Vidambanam, I think he has some, Prabhu wants to. Nirnam Vidambanam, Naveda Kaschit, Bhagavan Chikrishitam, you know that word. So, Nirnam Vidambanam. Your pastimes, which appear so human, are so bewildering. This is very inspiring. How Queen Kunti, that tension between Krishna's divinity and Krishna's personal nectarian pastimes, they do contradict each other, but they can be appreciated by the same personality. It's a wonderful bewilderment, in that sense. Yes? Yes?
Sure. I was just thinking out loud that there are two types of bewildering. At one category of persons, when they are bewildered, they become more attracted to Krishna. Whilst the other category, when they are bewildered, they become least attracted or most hateful of Krishna. So it's like
that's called a test. We become tested, and then if we pass the test, then we advance. More, but if we don't pass the test, then we blame it on Krishna or lose our faith or something like that. Does that relate to that thing? Anyone else? Okay, I think we can stop here. Thank you. Oh, that'd be a funny problem.
I just want to make a comment on Jiva Kamprabhu's query about Krishna causing But by making his pastime bewildering, he's causing, in one sense, the atheists to be bewildered. But then, by being bewildered, they're condemned. But it was Krishna who caused it. That seems to be the problem. But to me, it's very simple. These are people who are not qualified to understand Krishna. They're envious of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna formed bewildering pastimes.
Krishna's, in one sense, mercy on the atheist, and that, as Prabhupada said, if you want to forget Krishna, Krishna could give you just that intelligence that you could forget him forever, if you really want to. Whereas Krishna's reciprocating the desire of everyone, and so he'll perform these. I mean, I had a huge test when I joined the movement, and just at that time, the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam was published. And I said, hey, look, I got enough problems. You tell me 2 and 2 is 5, I'm looping. I already learned that word. So, in other words, these are tests, and then how we deal with that. But as you're saying, that it's based on desire. In other words, if someone is an atheist and really wants to, and there's so many atheists in the world that are becoming so radical and militant now in different places, if you really want to push that, then Krishna will help you. But you want to worship Devata, Yo-Yo, Yam-Yam, Kanumbata, make your faith steady so you can worship a particular demigod, even though you're actually only worshiping him if you don't know it. So Krishna is amazing. It's a perfect system, and Krishna can even go outside his own system if he wants to, which he sometimes does. Samani Yudhahati Jesus, the Bhakti Bhagavan. Okay, thank you all so much. Jagat Guru, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Sisi, Dada, Samasundara Kijai, Sri Krishna Balaram Kijai, Sisi Goni Sahasundara. Thank you. Thank you.